everyone to another episode of For the Love of Cinema. My name is Grayson, and joining me as always...
Hey everyone, it's Nick Morris.
Hey, Nick Morris. How's your week been, Nick? What have you been up to?
It's been good. It got a little colder out. Grayson, it started snowing. Started snowing, man. And I'm not talking small flakes. I'm talking these flakes hit me in the face. I'm not gonna lie, I almost cried. You know?
Here we had some Saturday. It was damn near a blizzard, and it only snowed for like 45 minutes to an hour, but there was I noticed there was a surprising amount of accumulation for only an hour of snow.
God.
Yeah, but it was I love snow. So like I was like jumping around with joy. I loved it.
I like snow too. I just wish it wasn't so cold.
Yeah, I don't. I'll be honest. I don't mind getting down to a certain temperature, but it's when it gets down like below 20. It's like, why? It's so cold.
Yeah.
Why is that a thing? I'm actually surprised. One of my thoughts I was having during the snow was, how did humanity survive? Like when back before there was like modern conveniences like heat.
Yeah, that's they didn't. They did not. Grayson.
It's like you wake up in medieval England and be like, well. It's dead of winter. What do you guys want to do?
Why is my foot black?
Why is my foot black? You guys want to get under some blankets and stay there? Yeah, let's do that. Okay, done. That's the whole day. Done. Can't imagine, but people must have been tougher back then.
Oh, yeah.
Because we definitely are not stuff.
That's the, that's the thing going around. Every generation gets
a little
less.
Yeah.
We'll save that for another time.
Well, actually, it might actually do good to discuss that in Daddy's Home, too, but that's this week, so... All right.
Oh, yeah.
Jumping into the box office. Now, this box office ranking for me is going to be kind of cool, and I'll tell you one in a minute. Number one, no surprise to anybody, Justice League. It is... surprisingly, though, it doesn't give a budget, and I wonder why, because it's brought in worldwide... $281 million, and surprisingly, the foreign market brought in more, $185 million, and the domestic only brought $96 million. I thought, if anything, those numbers would be flip flopped.
Yeah, that's strange.
I think so.
Go ahead. Sorry.
No, I said I think that's strange as well. I find that very odd.
Hmm.
But
so I wonder how they liked it compared to.
Avengers
over here.
Oh right, no, I totally understand that. Yeah, I'm sure Justice League will do okay though. I'm sure it'll be a huge success. Here, number two is what I thought was the interesting one. Wonder, no budget given, but $27 million domestic. That's much higher. Given how in the past week we've talked about some movies, how they just one. I mean, thank you for your service. The first week we talked about it was like it barely broke $6 million, and then the next week barely broke $10 million. And
yeah.
I'm surprised. I would feel like that one has more of an appeal to people than Wonder, but Wonder brought in almost $30 million on this first week, so that's not bad. Not bad
no,
at
that's
all.
That's awesome.
Yes.
Yeah. I'll give them a golf clap.
a golf clap.
Wonder.
A tiny the two fingers on two fingers clap. Yes. Good for you, Wonder. Number three. Absolutely no surprise to anyone else. Thor Ragnarok, although it fell two spots, last week was number one, this week's number is number three. $180 million budget so far. Nick, you want to take a guess? I'll tell you what, I'm going to narrow it down for you. It's less than 750, more than 700.
Oh, oh wow. 739.
738. 20. Good for you, Nick. Dang.
Oh. I'm getting closer every week.
Every week, your powers are being more and more refined. Awesome. So that store is still kicking major ass, making tons of money. Fell two spots though, but I suspect that after this week, Thor will be back on top, above at least Wonder. Mm-hmm. If not, I mean we're also looking at this coming up. I mean, Coco and Darkest Hour, Man Who Invented Christmas may do something. I don't think Polaroid's going to do much, or the current war. I don't know, but I mean, time will definitely tell.
Yeah.
Daddy's Home 2, number 4 this week, was number 2 last week. Not doing wonderful, but $51 million on a $69 million budget. I can't say I'm super happy with that. I am happy. It could have been a lot worse.
Yeah.
At this point, could definitely be a whole lot worse. But it's not a terrible number to put up there. Murder on the Orient Express. With a budget of just $55 million. So far, it's done $148 million. No surprise here. The foreign market did 96, while the domestic only 51, which makes sense. But we'll get into that in a little bit because of the whole the Agatha Christie novels and the Poirot and Derek Jacobi and his Cat File. It's just I think that the title itself kind of identifies more of a foreign market. So
yeah,
but it's got tons of star power though for sure. Speaking of star, number six is The Star. $20 million budget, and so far domestically has only made 10. So not a great start for The Star, but that's got a ton of voices. Anthony Anderson, Kristen Chenoweth, Gabriel Iglesias, that's Kris Kristofferson, Tracy Morgan, Christopher Plummer, Ving Rhames, Gina Rodriguez, and Oprah Winfrey are all stars in this, are all voice acting in this movie, but so far that huge voice talent didn't do much to bring in some money, so. And number seven, Bad Moms Christmas. It fell three spots as number four last week. $28 million production budget. Worldwide so far, $77 million. I think they're pretty happy with that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure this movie will probably run towards Christmas and maybe of...
No, I'm gonna disagree with you on that one. I don't think it's going to make it past Christmas. I don't think it's going to make it to Christmas.
You don't think so?
I don't. I think it was released too early for that.
I agree with you. There's way too many movies coming out.
Yeah, it's just... There's way too many movies. I mean, Star Wars is just going to gobble up any competition for, like, 3 weeks. You know, I mean... And whatever Star Wars does, and Jumanji, Greatest Showman... Anyway, we'll get into that in a second. But I'm really excited for what's coming out. But Bad Moms Christmas, I'm sure with that budget and that worldwide... the studio's not displeased with that one. That one I can say. Lady Bird. I almost said Larry Bird. Lady Bird. No production budget given. See, here's what I'm talking about. In contrast to the one of the aforementioned movies, is it's only done $4.7 million. I don't know how widely released it's been. It's not great.
Yeah.
So, I haven't even seen much advertising for this. I haven't seen many trailers. I saw one trailer, but I had to seek it out online. And it wasn't before a movie I watched, so I mean, I rarely had to go find the trailer. Like, it wasn't in front of any movies I was watching. So, all right. Number nine, Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri. This one looks kind of great. This one came out November 10th. We didn't cover it because it wasn't a super wide release. I don't even think it's super wide right now, but... It's getting pretty good reviews. It's not getting there's no budget given, but domestic has made less than $2 million.
It looks interesting though. It looks interesting to say the least. Woody Harrelson always fun to watch on screen.
Yeah, Woody Harrelson, Sam Rockwell, Abby Cornish, Peter Dinklage, Frances McDormand. Like those are pretty good names, and those are pretty household names too.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you watch the Game of Thrones, someone did the Game of Thrones, the opening, the iconic opening to, they just say Peter Dinklage's name, like, Peter Dinklage, it's just funny. I listen, it's hilarious. And number 10, Jigsaw, still holding on. Jigsaw still number 10, off a $10 million budget, $88 million. That's pretty good. So let's just say at $20 million, that's... profitable after $20 million, even though it's a lot less. But this worst case scenario, profitable after $20 million. So it's made $60 million in profit so far, $68 million. So I don't think they're displeased with that one either.
That'll do.
And some more notable spots from 11 to 20. Blade Runner number 11. Let's see what. Happy Death Day number 16. Killing of a Sacred Deer 18. Kingsman. Crawling back up there, 19, and My Friend Dahmer is in spot 20. So that's your box office. And we have, so in order to plan your movie watching this past weekend, Justice League, Wonder, The Star, and Roman J. Israel. The 22nd to the 24th, this coming week, there will be Coco, Darkest Hour, The Man Who Invented Christmas, The Current War, and Polaroid. And December 1st, we get some limited releases of The Shape of Water, and Disaster Artist. Very, very limited. However, other ones, he's out there in Wonder Wheel. And December 8th, The Shape of Water goes a little wider. Just Getting Started, and I, Tonya. December 15th is a big week for a lot of people. Star Wars, The Last Jedi, Ferdinand, and Gotti. December 20th, the 22nd, Jumanji, The Greatest Showman, Pitch Perfect 3, Downsizing, Father Figures. Those are all, I feel like those are all movies that everyone's going to want to see.
Yeah, and 1 second, Downsizing, Grayson. I don't want to say I told you so, but I told you so.
About what?
I saw a second trailer for Downsizing, and it totally blew the movie wide open. I don't think his wife goes through it.
No, she definitely doesn't. I mean, I saw that trailer too, and that's, I know you, I kind of agree with you on that. It kind of ruins the whole movie. I mean, not like, it doesn't ruin the whole movie, but it kind of takes away some of the magic for me.
Yeah, I'm thinking, so how's this going to happen? Are they going to get divorced? You know, is he going to get half this money that inflates, and what is going on? How can you do that, you know?
I mean, that's kind of a late development as far as revealing in the trailer, but I mean, it's, I'm sure, obviously it's for him to fall for another girl. So, yeah. I mean, this is American cinema where that is always the case. I mean, there's a relationship in every single movie we make. I mean, even in Jigsaw, there's kind of a relationship budding. So,
big moves for Matt Damon, I will say, in that movie. That's awesome. I can't wait to see it.
No, I'm excited. I'm not sure. It's a smart choice. I don't really think it's a safe choice, but it's a smart choice, if that makes any sense, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll see how that shakes out. But all those look pretty awesome. And then on Christmas Day, The Phantom Thread and Molly's Game. I'm not quite sure. I've been thinking about it in my head about Molly's Game. I'm not quite sure how that will do Christmas Day. That doesn't really strike me as a Christmas Day movie, but
yeah, I don't know about that.
I mean, it could do fine. I mean, I don't see why it wouldn't do okay. And then, so we have countdowns. 1 week. This comes out on Tuesday, so listen to this Tuesday or later. You have up until Friday until Coco. Well, actually, this week, as in like Tuesday through Friday, Coco, Darkest Hour, The Man Who Invented Christmas, and then you have 2 weeks for Shape of Water and Disaster Artist, 3 weeks for I, Tonya, 4 weeks away, 1 month, Star Wars, The Last Jedi, Ferdinand, and then just over a month, 5 weeks, Jumanji, Greatest Showman, Downsizing. Now. I know. Who's not excited for that? We got some good movies coming out.
a lot of great movies coming up.
Yeah, I agree.
Hopefully great movies.
And I want to say about The Greatest Showman. I gave my bit on why I think the trailer was amazing. What I thought it was. It was, and then a buddy of mine texted me yesterday the story on one of the sites he peruses. He's out in Los Angeles. He's working on he's starting on Top Gun 2 very soon, but he texted me the story about the trailer for The Greatest Showman, how the title is The Greatest Showman Trailer, or Hugh Jackman, The Greatest Showman Trailer has hope. And I'm hoping that means, because it looks like such a magical movie that it almost could encapsulate that. I'm really excited about that. You know, I gave my piece on that, and I'm really excited that someone else may have seen that. So
yeah, no, exactly. I totally agree with you, man.
Oh,
the,
boy.
The song in the trailer gets me, you know, it pulled me in, and I'm like, wow.
There's a new extended trailer too that has, it's even more of a, like a heart, like it grips at your heartstrings and it just makes you smile in the best way. We're going to cover that in 1 week closer, one of the weeks closer to it, but I'm super excited about that. And Nick, are you excited? How excited are you for The Incredibles 2?
Oh man, I've been waiting for this ever since The Incredibles ended. this is a long time coming.
I would agree with that. That Incredibles is a pretty solid movie. It's consistently, I think, in the top of Pixar's choices, depending on how you number them, which may differ from person to person, but the first Incredibles movie is a pretty solid choice. That came out in November 2004. $92 million budget. It left theaters making $633 million, so that was a very good investment for them.
Yes.
It got the brand out there. People love it. And the teaser is out for the second Incredibles movie, and it features Jack-Jack as the baby. He has his laser eyes, pew-pew, and with his laser eyes, he cuts the Incredible logo. He cuts the bottom piece of it in two, so it's the Incredibles 2. And then it shows, one of my favorite teasers ever. He's Bob, the father, is holding the baby, literally holding the baby, and he's super excited, he has powers, and then Jack-Jack all of a sudden combusts into flame, then there's electricity swirling about, and then he shoots his laser eyes and just cuts right through Bob's hair. So, really excited about that.
That's good.
Also, when the title came up, it's still a Disney Pixar venture, so I'm kind of glad that's still being recognized as a joint venture, though, even though it's so that's really cool. And Star Wars, The Last Jedi, the runtime, it's supposed to be 150 minutes, so that's 2 hours and 30 minutes. That includes the credits from the movie starting to the credits, the last credit rolling. Does not, however, include trailers, so be forewarned that you're going to The Last Jedi. Depending on what theater you go to, some theaters play a lot of trailers. AMC, Marquee, Carmike, they all tend to play tons of trailers. When smaller chain theater houses, you know, like especially specialized ones in the cities, or ArcLight, for example, is when I go to a lot. They don't one or two trailers and then the movie starts. So you could be there for, you know, anywhere from 2.5 hours to almost three. So be prepared for a long sit.
I showed up to... Sorry, Jason, go ahead.
No, I just said be prepared for a very long sit.
Yeah, very true. I can walk into a movie 18 minutes late and still be there before the last trailer. But I do not advise that for Star Wars. You want to get a prime seat.
Yes.
And, you just got to make sure everything's right. Get your popcorn, get the bathroom, whatever you got to do. You got to get that prime seat. That's what it's about.
And a lot of theaters now, I'm not sure how I agree with this. And I've only been thinking about it recently because it's only when I came here that the theaters do this. Or at least one theater chain here does this. And when you buy your ticket, you select your seat. So,
I've done that once before.
I know a lot of the AMCs are switching to that. Not a lot of the AMCs have all switched that yet, but I know some have. But a lot of them back in Pennsylvania do not have the select seating, unless that's changed in the past couple of months. But I'm not sure how I feel about that, truth be told. I'm a big fan of the people who go in first are rewarded by seat choice.
Yes, very true.
I don't like to reward people for, oh, no, we can go in late. We can disturb everyone and still get our seat. You know, who cares? You know, we'll be fine. You know, I don't like giving them. I mean, yes, there are two sides to this argument. I'm just not sure I agree with making it easier and more comfortable for people to come late and be like, ah, it's okay. We'll still have our seats. I don't know if I like that.
Yeah, exactly. That's a real good question about movie theaters these days. But I've only been to the one movie theater where I have selected my seat, and luckily I was one of five people in there.
totally matters, yeah.
Yeah, it really doesn't matter.
I always sit top left. That's my thing. I always sit the very top row, the absolute left. That's where I like to sit. No one's in front of me. I don't have people, you know, people aren't like shuffling in front of you and like standing up and like, that's where I like to sit. So as long as I can get one of those top left side of the theater, like top two seats against the wall, I'm super happy. It's when I don't, I'm like, ugh, I just get annoyed.
puts a little pressure on you.
But I know that the sound in movie theaters are optimized for the center. There's like, I forget, I talked to a sound engineer one time that came to calibrate the sound in a movie theater I was working at, and he pointed out the seat. Now, granted, this was very early 2000s. So, I mean, sound engineering in movie theaters could have absolutely changed. But it's, at one time, up to, or maybe even still, I know the sound is optimized for, no one in the bottom half is anywhere sitting in a good seat at all. If you get down there, sorry about your luck, it's terrible. But it's like, If there's 15 rows, it's optimized for rows like 9, 10, 11, and then all the way up like 6 or 7 rows. So those middle seats in the theater, that's where the sound is best optimized. So that's where your ears are getting assaulted from all kinds of angles, and you know the sound bouncing off walls coming back to you, and that's where the sound's wonderful. But a lot of people, I don't think, care a whole lot.
Yeah, that's very true.
Did you ever sit up front?
Oh yeah, I did last night when I went to see Murder on the Orient Express.
Oh man,
I showed up and the seats were full, and I was like, okay, I got to do something here.
That's rough, man.
One of the worst ones was when I went up to see the Hateful Eight on the road show up in Pittsburgh. Had to catch a bite to eat, you know, so we went to this nice little Mexican restaurant and
there you go.
You know, came back in and I was like, guys, we got 5 minutes till this movie starts and I don't want to be late. So we end up going to the theater. There's no seats. We walked all the way up, all the way down. We finally found a couple. We found three in a row, like in the back row, but it was bottom center. So wasn't horrible, but wasn't ideal.
No, not either. I can't, if my only choice is in that bottom section, if I'm not as far back as I can be in that bottom section, I'll just, because you can't enjoy the movie. You're straining your neck, you know, you're looking left, you're looking right, your eyes are strained the whole time. Depending on how close the theater, like the theater seats are in relation to the screen. I've seen some theaters where the top half of the bottom section isn't so bad. But it's that the bottom few rows, that's just the worst. They might as well just take them out. Like, no one wants those seats.
No one wants that.
No.
No.
But if you've ever read the back of your ticket, I know a lot of theater chains still do this, that they reserve the right to, a ticket doesn't guarantee you a particular seat, it guarantees you a seat, but not any, so they could seat you, literally they could seat you, if they had to, one person here, one person down there, another person top left if there was no other seats, so that sucks too, so.
Yeah.
But, I mean, if you get there late, like you did, Nick.
Exactly. People, be smart.
Be smart.
Go half an hour early to Star Wars.
Get there, like, you know, 25 hours early, you know, get a good seat.
Get your tent, you know, have a real good time.
Have a real good time, freeze to death, you know, do your thing.
I've been out here for 3 days, man.
and then you fall asleep and people just take all the seats. And it's like, oh, jeez. That opens December 15th, Star Wars, big deal. Okay, so Fantastic Beasts 2, really excited. It's got a title now for those Harry Potter fans out there. Fantastic Beasts, The Crimes of Grindelwald. Ooh. And I know, I'm so excited, man. I'm so excited. That's next year, literally we're like a year and a week away from that. So that's exciting. According to WB, I'm going to read this next line because I didn't want to misquote Warner Brothers, it's just in case, but... According to Warner Brothers, in the film, Grindelwald has escaped custody and will be seen gathering followers to his nefarious cause. In the next film, we will also see Newt Scamander, played by Eddie Redmayne, enlisted by Albus Dumbledore, or a young Albus Dumbledore, Jude Law, trying to stop him. So, those of you who are waiting for this wizard battle, it's coming. Just know it's coming. So excited.
That's awesome.
The Great Wizard Battle, which is the equivalent of, watching episode 1, you knew there was a fight between Obi-Wan and Anakin. Even though you're going into episode 3, you're like, okay, this is the one we get to see the epic fight. We get to see the duel of fates, a wonderful soundtrack, wonderful track in that piece. You know, I mean, that's the one of the few watchable scenes of that entire first trilogy is. But you know that big battle's coming.
It's my favorite scene in the trilogy.
that is most people's favorite. That's one of the, I mean,
it kind of has to be.
Yeah, because those lines before when Obi-Wan comes off the ship and then, like, Anakin, like, telekinesis strangles Padme, those lines are so bad. I can't even, I think about those lines, like, those are the best takes you got? Like, those are awful. Jeez. When he's pacing back and forth, Anakin, and he says, "You will not take her from me!" Wow, like, that's just... awful. Why, who wrote that?
And Lucas come on wrote it. Now. I
know. Awful.
You do better.
God awful, man. Director Joe Carnahan, who, for those of you listening in Pittsburgh, I know a lot of our audience is in Pittsburgh or the surrounding area. Joe Carnahan did Out of the Furnace. I was very lucky to work on that. I actually met Joe Carnahan, a really cool dude. He's teaming up with Mel Gibson and Frank Grillo to do... No, he didn't do... I'm sorry, that wasn't Out of the Furnace. It was the first episode of Those Who Kill. Sorry, I got my director. Yeah.
Oh, man.
The first episode of Those Who Kill was Joe Carnahan. Or maybe he's the... he was there for some reason I met him. Maybe he's just the writer of the... I can't remember. I'll have to give further clarification on that, but... He has a Groundhog Day-style action thriller, and Frank Grillo plays a retired military who keeps playing a day over and over again, and he dies at the end of it, and he needs to figure out why. So we just had one of those, Happy Death Day, so very popular, so hopefully we'll get another popular one people like. Mel Gibson.
That's awesome. Good.
I'm super excited for Mel Gibson to... Every time he gets another one, I'm like, oh, yeah, it's Mel. He's finally coming back. I love Mel.
that's Frank Grillo is a pretty good actor in action movies. There's a couple on Netflix with him, and just a couple I forget the names of, but he's really good in action movies, and teaming up with Mel Gibson, you know? Ooh.
Joe Carnahan. He did The Gray... And now I'm kind of like, how did I get them mixed up? He did The Gray. He did, looking at what I know he did something in Pittsburgh. I just can't remember what it was. It was definitely, it was Those Who Kill. He directed one episode. Okay. He directed the pilot episode. I'm not crazy. He was there. He directed the pilot episode. That's when I met him. But we have another director who worked in Scott Cooper, who wasn't coming up soon here. This is a good one. I'm really excited about this. A new Lord of the Rings TV show is planned. Now, for those of you who love Game of Thrones, as of right now, we are scheduled on Netflix to get... So Netflix is much more... It's much more widely... People have it more than they have HBO. So a lot more people get to enjoy this. Netflix beat out HBO, beat out Showtime, beat out Netflix for getting this. So super excited for a Game of Thrones-style TV show. It'll be in multiple seasons, and it'll all take place before The Fellowship and after The Hobbit. So that's exciting. Ooh. That is very exciting. Hopefully a lot of the players will reprise their roles. Ian McKellen's probably like, no, I'm too old. No. No. Not again. I'm done playing that wizard. Done.
You shall not offer me a
pot. Yeah, but that's really exciting. That's big news. That goes to Amazon. As of right now, that goes to Amazon. That of course could change because you know money is the evil of the world and changes everything.
Speaking of production companies, big things happening over at Sony, Grayson.
Ooh.
Quentin Tarantino signed with them. Yeah, to make his to produce his ninth movie. You know, to make it, to shine it bright. it looks good and. One note I'm taking from Quentin here is he said it's not a Charles Manson film. It's a 1969 film or something like that, but very interesting, and I'm very interested. And it's crazy how all these production companies, they rolled out the red carpet for him, Grayson. I don't know if you saw anything, but I guess a couple of companies they're escaping my mind right now, but, you know, they set up the whole 60s. They had a bunch of cars. They threw a logo, an old throwback logo. Like, come on.
What are we coming on? Like, come on. What are we...
I mean, yeah, you know what? I mean, they're eating out the palm of Quentin's hands.
Good. You know? I mean... Well, with the Weinstein company going belly up, well, not really, it's just restructuring. But he would have been crazy to somehow stick with whatever company came out of the ashes of that one. But yeah. I mean, Tarantino makes movies that people love. That is undeniable. His movies make tons of money. He has a huge following, tons of fans. A lot of people cite as their. As a director, they want to emulate. They cite Tarantino. So that he's a big deal. I'm glad he found a new home with Sony. I love Sony more than anything in the world.
You'll like this though. He wouldn't even speak to anyone in a production company unless he had $100 million signed, you know, guarantee.
See, so, that's what I'm not okay with. Why? I mean, you're not James Cameron. You're not like, you know, come on, buddy. They're I mean, geez. See, there's no humility anymore. That's what I mean. Yes, he's a great director, but he's not. I don't think he's able to say nope, $100 million or bust. Like, you can't say that. You don't have enough. You don't have enough clout to say that, Tarantino.
I don't know, man. Quentin Tarantino, he's huge. You know that.
No, he is enormous, but $100 million? Are you kidding me?
It's crazy. It's crazy to ask for that much.
But I'm sure he got it.
Yeah, he definitely got it. He probably got a lot more.
I'm sure he got it, and he got like a back end deal. Like he probably gets like X number of percentage after a certain dollar amount is met with each movie. Like I'm sure he got everything he wanted. I'm sure he has 27 assistants, and I'm sure they're all plucked from the prettiest sororities in the country. Yeah. Yeah, I'm sure he got everything he wanted. I have no doubt about that.
One thing that he might I don't want to misquote the article, but I believe he gets a certain percentage of the back before it gets taxed.
Off the back end.
Off the back end, yeah. Is that what? Yeah.
That's awesome. Well, good for him. You know, I mean, if he got it, he got it. I know there's. I know I've read a couple times in history, well, at least a film history, when an actor didn't want to do a part, and he just, I know Schwarzenegger more than one time didn't want to do a movie and asked for this ridiculous amount of money, and he got it. So he just so he just did the money. I mean, like, it's one of those things that's, I mean, it's one of those things that if a date you're on is completely failing, why not just try the most horrendous pickup lines, see if they work, you know, see if anything changes. You know, like, why not? So, well, that's good for Quentin Tarantino. I'm people love his movies. I'm excited to see what he does next. And finally, always more on the Terminator front, the Terminator film right now is moving forward. Billy Ray, who wrote Captain Phillips, will write the movie with Tim Miller directing and James Cameron producing. This is a big deal. So, again, it's been confirmed again that he's ignoring everything after the second movie, after Judgment Day, and he's going with that. So, I'm really excited. I'm a huge Terminator fan, huge Alien fan. James Cameron's involved in both of those, so we'll see what happens. This is it could be like a new era as far as directors coming back to franchises that have been long dead or just dying. So
yeah,
we'll see.
Very true.
And so, go ahead.
Oh, that's awesome. I love that. How, I mean, obviously you can't forget about, you know, the movies in the past, but it's good that there's some type of new beginning here where we can, you know, stretch our legs into something new.
I agree. And those of you who are naysayers, I'm like, oh, Terminator, why do you keep talking about Terminator? Because everything James Cameron does is, well, I mean, is either a technical or a box office achievement. I don't want to say great, because Avatar wasn't wonderful, but it wasn't terrible. It was watchable. And, you know, it really did awesome things technically, so I mean, James Cameron really is the king of movies. So,
I mean, he's been to the deepest depths of the ocean. So, come on.
He has, and he's got two of the highest grossing movies of all. And Titanic's actually coming back in the theaters. Did you hear about that?
I didn't. When's it coming back?
I think I heard on the radio maybe the end of November, or the beginning of the last after Thanksgiving weekend, or before the very beginning of December.
Ooh, okay.
For the 20th anniversary.
That's awesome.
So I'm sure that movie will make another $58 trillion.
You know what else is coming back to theaters?
Nick, what's that?
Dunkirk.
Dunkirk, really?
Dunkirk, yeah.
Nice. I'll watch that one again. I've seen that now a number of times, but I have to watch that one again. That one's one that kind of grows on you as far as... I think Dunkirk really is one of the greats as far as not only Nolan's concerned, but movies in general. I think Dunkirk is fantastic.
It is.
So
it really is.
Shout out to my boy Christopher Nolan.
get out there, folks.
Shout out to you, Christopher Nolan. Good job making that movie. I met him. I shook his hand, had a couple conversations with him. He's a cool dude, man. He's brilliant. I'm sure his mind is on an entirely different level than most people. But he makes good movies, so congratulations. And Nick, how do you feel about Darkest Hour trailer?
You know what? It's it's interesting, especially because we just got done talking about Dunkirk, and that's, you know, one of the things that is shown in the trailer. It's interesting because you know, Winston Churchill certainly was a fantastic person, great man.
Well, I mean, a lot of stories
behind him.
A lot of people will say he was the one that held that was the fabric that held the world together at that point. I mean, like, there was theorists and historians that the Battle for Britain was one of the most important fights in that. Well, one of the most important fights in that war, that, you know, Britain would have just capitulated and surrendered, it would have been bad. Mm-hmm. I mean, but they didn't. They kept the resistance going. The pilots kept Hitler's Air Force at bay. That was a very important time. Director Joe Wright is bringing this to the screen. Gary Oldman, Lily James, who, by the way, has the ultimate Harry Potter name. I want to point that out because those are his mother and father's names, Lily and James. And Kristin Scott Thomas. World War II is on the brink of losing the Battle of Britain. The eyes of the world were watching. That's kind of the story. I mean, you know the Darkest Hour. You know the story. It's, you know, one man and stands resolute against insurmountable odds, keeping everything going. Winston Churchill, at least in the trailer, Oldman delivers, "We will fight on the beach, and we will fight in the fields," and he delivers that line so well. So, yeah, and that's a very iconic line in history, one of the most famous.
I was just about to say, Gary Oldman looks pretty goddamn fantastic in the trailer.
Yeah, I mean, Gary, he has earned the right to do this role.
Mm-hmm.
Oldman, he's a fantastic actor. You know, he's done gobs of movies, dozens and dozens.
That's interesting you say that because, you know, that's true because this isn't, you know, this role isn't something you just hand off to anybody.
It's a very iconic role that needs to be given to, you know, one of maybe six or seven people on the planet.
Yeah.
I mean, as that have as big a name, Gary Oldman. Everyone knows him from, of course, the Harry Potter. You know, I mean, he a dozen things he's been in that people know him from. So no, he definitely earned that right. And we move on to father figures. I'm laughing so hard. I just saw the trailer. Director Lawrence Sher brings it to us. Owen Wilson, Christopher Walken, J.K. Simmons, Ving Rhames, Glenn Close, and Ed Helms. Two brothers set out to find who their real father is upon learning they've been lied to by their mother. Yeah, this is an interesting premise for a film because it absolutely a comedy. There's no other way this movie could be done.
Yeah.
It has to be a comedy. And one of my favorite lines is delivered in a way that I think Owen Wilson just knocked it out of the park. He's sitting on the couch with his mother and goes, "I've always wondered where I got my zest for lovemaking." And this is, I should preface this by saying, you know, Glenn Close, his mother, she starts by saying, you know, monogamy really wasn't a thing for me. I really didn't, you know, that really wasn't important to me. And then the next line is he says, "I've always wondered where I got my zest for lovemaking." And then he points to his mother to the left. I thought that was hilarious.
Oh, man.
Go ahead, sorry.
This does look hilarious. Classic Owen Wilson, brother comedy, obviously.
I love Owen Wilson comedy.
There's a lot of funny things in this trailer.
they walk up to Terry Bradshaw, and they're asking about their mother. They say her name, and he starts talking about what she's able to do in the bedroom and has the greatest ass, and then they're like, "Well, she's our mom," so... And then you see his face just like go to horror. It's amazing. There are so many good things in the trailer. What's some that you found funny, Nick?
Just J.K. Simmons freaking out. Obvious J.K. Simmons reaction. Terry Bradshaw, you know, I think it's Ving Rhames who plays the other part. He's like, she was a dick whisperer or something, and I don't know, man. This movie looks very funny.
He's like, she's a dick whisperer, and then Owen's like, well, she's our mom, and then Ving Rhames like, all we did is cuddle. That's all we did was cuddle.
All we did. How can you go all in and then pull back out like that?
Interesting you use that terminology. How can you go all in and pull out? Huh? And then they hit a person. And then they hit a person backing up, and you see Owen say, what was that? And you see Ed Helms, like, grimacing, like, I think it was a person. So I'm really excited about that. That looks funny. It looks like, it looks Wedding Crashers heights of funny. And to me, Wedding Crashers is so funny. And at long last, we come to Hostiles by director Scott Cooper. Excuse me. That's who made Out of the Furnace. I also talked to him. Cool guy. I still am lucky enough to exchange emails with him from time to time. He's a really cool dude. Really down to earth. Really, I think, gets... He's a younger guy. He also did Crazy Heart. And he did another one, which his name escapes me right now. But he's good. Christian Bale, Rosamund Pike, Ben Foster, and Wes Studi. In a post-Civil War America, an army captain must escort a Cheyenne chief and his family to safety. We know certain things are going to come into play. From the trailer, you know that Christian Bale's character has no love for I think he calls them savages or Native Americans. He has no love for them. But I mean, there's going to be a honor bound duty versus personal feelings going to come into this. You know, I mean, it's Rosamund Pike is a woman who we can tell from the trailer has either lost a lot of her family or all of it, and she is going along for the ride. So there's all wonderful things are going to come into play. One of my favorite lines is from what I can tell, it's one of Bale's men that says, I've killed everything that walks or crawled. If you do it enough, you get used to it. And then the next shot is a young kid, hopefully working under Bale as well. He says, well, that's what I'm afraid of. Which is it's a wonderful line, a reaction to the aforementioned line of killing becomes so easy. And then, like he says, that's what I'm afraid of.
Yeah, so, that's some powerful stuff, man. That's awesome.
And also, go ahead.
Oh, no, I was...
I was going to say, when I also like to pay attention to if a trailer ends with a line of dialogue and then, you know, fade to black, that's what I love. That's one of the things I love about trailers, and this one is no different. Bale's character says, understand this. When we lay our heads down out here, we're all prisoners. So that's going to be a major theme that has major thematic relevance, so that's going to be exciting.
Oh, man. Good trailer. That movie looks great.
Yeah, I'm very excited. I like Christian Bale, not as much as most people. To me, he still doesn't have that role that just like, oh, my God, you got to see this movie, Christian Bale. But he's a damn good actor, so...
You're darn right.
And he was Batman, so, I mean...
Did you, speaking of Christian Bale, because I do like a lot of his movies too, but have you seen his current weight gain?
No, has he gained a lot of weight?
Yeah, well, you know how he goes from up and down these various weight changes, for roles, obviously. I forget who he is. He's doing a historical figure, and he's bald, and he is, I wouldn't say obese, but he's a little chunky, Grayson. He's a little chunky.
Good. I mean, if it's for a role, that's fine. If it's not for a role, that's fine. I mean, you know, a guy has a right to get fat if he wants. I mean, everyone's got that right. So
exactly.
I'm sure it's for a role, though, knowing...
definitely.
Yeah, so definitely. That's exciting. I know we talked about The Hostiles before there was a trailer. We talked about it many episodes ago, but now there's a trailer. Please watch it. Enjoy it. Watch it when it comes out. I'm sure the movie will be awesome. I know it's got a release date, a wide release date for 2018, but it also said, up on the, when I saw the trailer in the theater, it also said December 2017. So I think they're trying to get it out for Oscar season, or just to be considered for Oscars. So, you know how that is. Like a movie that played in like two theaters is able to, you know, compete for best picture. So, I don't know. So, did you want to say anything else about that trailer?
No. Alright.
Well.
I really did enjoy it, though.
Alright, Nick, we have a surprise for you. I have one of the other show in this building right now, Suits, is shooting. And I've asked someone to come over and introduce herself. Talk about movies for a second and talk about what she does. Go ahead and introduce yourself.
Hi, I'm Caitlin Maldonado, and I am a set deck coordinator here in Chicago.
Nick, meet Caitlin. Caitlin, meet Nick.
Hey, Caitlin.
Hi.
Glad to meet you.
So,
not in person, but voice-wise.
So, set deck coordinator,
yes.
Those who may not know, what exactly does that entail? You can be as broad as you want, or you can be as vague or specific as you like.
Typically, my day-to-day, I track the budget, track all the spending of our set deck buyers. I do research on various items we might need. I get checks. It's not terribly exciting.
No, but it is. She's making it sound like it is a busy job. You keep busy.
Yes.
You know, it's a 60-hour-a-week job, so.
It sounds like she deals with a lot of cash flow.
Yes. I do. There's a lot of numbers. When I was working on The Shy with Grayson, actually, I was in here daily.
Every day.
Every day, multiple times a day.
As soon as she came in, I would just throw my pen up in the air. I'm like, Caitlin, what do you want today, Caitlin? What was it today? So, Caitlin, we're talking about some movies, but give me your favorite movie of all time. Doesn't matter what it is, as long as you like it.
Princess Bride.
That's a good movie.
It is a good movie.
Classic.
Classic movie indeed. Yeah. Are you looking forward to any movies coming up? Star Wars, maybe?
I am looking forward to Star Wars. Although I haven't been as, I don't know, vigilant about the movies as I should be, working 60 hours a week.
This job is a full-time
It's
job.
A full-time. I kind of go home and go to bed.
Yeah, I can imagine after working 12-hour days. Most time I just go home and just decompress.
Mm-hmm.
After you go home, you know, you wash up, you get something to eat. You watch something on Netflix, it's like 11:30, 12
yeah.
o'clock. It's like, oh my goodness, this is my
the whole nightly ritual.
Yeah, I mean, of course, you gotta do the nightly ritual, but what about Jumanji? You excited for Jumanji, The Greatest Showman, Downsizing, Pitch Perfect 3, any of those?
I think, does The Greatest Showman have Zac Efron in it?
It does. Of all the people in it, you choose Zac Efron.
Well, yes. I know this because my best friend was the key set PA for that.
Good for her, that's awesome.
Yes.
I'm really looking forward to this movie. There is
yeah.
no movie in the past year I'm looking forward to as much as Greatest Showman.
Yeah, that was
so
good.
Excited.
She says it's
yeah.
supposed to be phenomenal, just watching them, like, sing live and rehearse all the dance moves and everything.
And in my mind, Best Picture. Like, there's no question I want it to be Best Picture. But then again, I want Daddy's Home 2 to be Best Picture for Mel Gibson as well.
Oh,
so.
Yes, that might happen.
Yes.
Oh, well, what else are you interested in? You got anything else you're looking forward to? What about Fantastic Beasts 2?
I didn't even see Fantastic Beasts. First one.
You're not a Harry Potter fan.
I am. I saw all the movies and I read all the books.
Except Fantastic Beasts and where to find
Fantastic
them.
Fantastic Beasts. And
where Fair enough. Well, you still have time. The next one comes out a year and a week from now, so you have plenty of time. It's on Netflix, usually.
Is it? I know Jude Law is supposed to be like a hot...
A hot Dumbledore.
Yes.
I love how you, of all the people in that movie, you choose a great show and you choose Zac Efron, this movie you choose Jude Law, two very good looking men.
Priorities.
So, now I want to get into, for just a second, so, your department dresses sets.
Yes.
What is that, to dress a set, exactly, so if you watch a movie, everything you're looking at, from decor on the wall, to the carpet on the floor, to whatever's on the desk, to a bed, that's all your department, right?
Yes, typically. We work a lot with the art department and the props department, for some overlapping items, like coffee cups and, you know, the carpet. Sometimes the art department will choose, but we get a nice say in everything you see.
That's pretty awesome. How does that, what defines, what separates a prop from a set, like a bed sheet, a set dressing to like a coffee cup, a prop? Where's the line there?
It's typically anything that an actor touches. So if you're going to, or it is a prop. So if you're going to pick up your coffee cup and drink it all around, and that's a big prop, then that's going to be props.
It's a prop, then, okay.
It's a prop, yeah. But if it's anything, say, like your computer, or if we're dressing a kitchen, and you see stuff in the background, like plates and stuff in your cabinets, that's set dressing.
Oh, interesting.
Yes.
So, Well, good.
It's a very fine line.
It's a very fine line. It's the movie industry is always. I learn something new every single day.
What's the coolest prop that you've had to deal with?
Or piece of set dressing.
Let's see. I feel like, I mean, to me, the guns are big. Those are always props. And to me, those are really cool because they're so detailed and most of the time they're just rubber.
Well, yeah, most guns, yeah, of course.
And it's like crazy to me that those are, I don't know, so realistic. But I geek out a lot about, like, the antique furniture that we find and put in places. That's what I love.
Oh, okay. Your favorite piece of antique furniture you put in so far? A piece you were like, I wish I could have that in my house, please.
Let's see. It was probably a headboard that we bought on Proud Mary, which is a movie I just did with Screen Gems Productions.
Okay.
And we bought, I forget, it's like a Russian mafia house. And Lisa Wolf, our set decorator on that, found this amazing, ornate headboard. And it was, like, kind of great in this eccentric way.
Well, great. That's exciting.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
And where does all the set dressing go after, for instance, on the Shy, because it's seasonal, we put it away for you to dress the sets the same way again. But on a movie, typically, what happens to the set dressing? Where does it go?
Because these were reshoots, we donated everything to local shelters around the city. Sometimes they store them for reshoots if they're big, important pieces that are pertinent to the main character. And typically those are stored in warehouses in L.A. or wherever they're shooting. So that's when you get all those memorabilia that pop up on the internet here and there because they've stored it for years.
Years.
We just keep it forever.
All right. Well, thank you very much for stopping in, Kate.
Yeah, thank you.
It was nice to see you.
Awesome.
It's always nice to see you, and you not need anything from me in accounting. Like, God, what do you need today, Kate?
I know, just to say hi.
Well, have a good evening. Thanks for stopping in.
Thanks. You too.
Thanks, Caitlin. That was awesome.
It was. Set decks is a good department. It's always a mystery to me, but I see everything on the money side. If I'm in accounting, I look at everyone's petty cash envelopes. I'm like, wow. This person bought 7 couches today. Okay. Cool.
7 of the same couches?
Well, I mean, the 7's a bit extreme, but if it's, you know, I mean, there are days I put in some weird, I don't remember what show it was, but I was entering an envelope, and of course they had to submit their receipts because in a petty cash envelope, receipts are as good as cash, and I'm putting in, and they had to go to a sex shop to buy a few things. And I had to put in, like, you had to put in the date, the name of the place, and, like, what it is. So, like, I had to put the date. I think it was 2016. It was in Pittsburgh. I forget the name of the place, but it was like a dildo. So I'd like put the date, name of the place, then like dildo, and like, yep, that's what they bought. So that's what I had to put in.
Oh God.
Yeah. So I mean, but it's all prop and it's all, you know, set deck, and it's all just to make it look authentic. So.
Yeah, that's hilarious.
So hopefully you got a little taste of what set deck entails. Those of you who do not know, as we jump into Daddy's Home 2 is one of the... I'm really excited about this movie. I was laughing. Let me tell you, Nick, I was laughing hard. I was slapping my knee, and I loved it. But before we get into that, Daddy's Home 2 2015 was a good financial success, obviously, because they made a second one. Will Ferrell, Mark Wahlberg, Linda Cardellini played Sarah, Thomas Hayden Church was Will Ferrell's boss, and the kids played by Owen Vicario and... We should have had this one brought up. And the little girl, whose name I do not see. Oh, Scarlett Estevez. It is a story of two fathers who are sharing custody of two kids. One's the biological father, Mark Wahlberg, and Will Ferrell is the new father because the wife remarried. And that is the plot of the first movie is they're bitter enemies, and you know they're just. They're trying to be each other by being hilarious. And they're trying to be each other by, you know, Mark trying to win his family back, but then Dusty Mehron, the Mark Wahlberg character, trying to win his family back. Though in the end, he realizes he can't, the reason why he left the first time, came back second time, he couldn't stay in the cones when dropping his kids off. So that would, you know, and then they end up at this hilarious dance becoming co-dads. you know, hilarious. Funny movie, funny movie.
That is fantastic.
Brings us to Daddy's Home 2. Nick, what do you think?
Yeah. Oh, man.
Give me your first impression.
Well, always hilarious. Both of them. Mark Wahlberg, Will Ferrell. Can't get enough of them on screen together. They're always hilarious. Takeaway, I don't know. There was a lot of funny stuff in this movie.
There was. It's kind of a beast unpack as far as comedies are concerned.
Yeah.
This one's the opposite. They are great. They're best friend co-dads now. You know, they're fist bumping, and you know, one of the first scenes I find hilarious is Mark Wahlberg is he's in charge of helping people drop off their kids and pick them up, and he's yelling at parents, "Stay in the cones." Like, just stay in the cones. Don't leave the cones. And then he talks about, like, "Hey, I'm going to come back there and punch you in the mouth. You're going to be missing some teeth." And then he talks so sweet to Will's character of Brad. This is the ultimate bromance movie, like 100%.
There was one part. It was when they were going to see the play. And Bill Burr, he's a hilarious comedian. He's the one who interrupts them, and he interrupts Brad. He, you know, says something asinine about the children or something, and Dusty was like, "Hey, shut up," or whatever, real heroic like. And Bill Burr's character was just like, "Yeah, okay."
Yeah, that's the father from the first one when Dusty had a little. Or Dusty and Brad had a little, like, a physical fight with in the dance in the end of the first one.
Okay.
Yeah, that's, and then they brought him back. Very disappointed, though, they didn't bring back the character of Griff from the first one. The handyman that kind of lived in Brad's house, kind of just existed, ate all of his cereal. He was hilarious. Didn't bring him back, didn't bring the old dog back. Which I thought was a major loss, only because it growled at Brad. Even in his own house, he kept growling at Brad, which I thought was hilarious. But those are some major misses, I think, is not bringing those two back.
Mm-hmm.
The dog may have since passed. I don't know. But
oh, man.
I know that Brad has not passed. The guy who plays Griff has not passed. Hannibal Buress. So I mean, he's still kicking. But I really was excited to see him. He was not in there. So let's talk about the new recent additions of Mel Gibson, who plays Kurt Mehron, Dusty's father, and John Lithgow plays Brad's father, Don. And so those are two new additions. And John Cena is also, he also makes an appearance as Roger, the father to Dusty's new stepdaughter. He's married to Roger's ex-wife, who is a novelist and stunningly gorgeous woman. So they had all kinds of triangle of kids going on. It's awesome. There's all kinds of hilarity. What I was disappointed in, I think, the most is I don't think they used Mel Gibson as effectively as they could have.
His role was very strange. It was pretty straightforward, but it was kind of strange how they used him, and they could have definitely used him. A lot more.
Well, the thing that yes, they could. He plays he plays Kurt Mehron, as I said earlier. He's a womanizer. He absolutely will put a woman before his son, which is why him and his son have a not a great relationship to begin with.
Daddy issues.
They have yes, for lack of better terms, daddy issues. It stems from. It stems from Dusty when he was very young in middle school. He was doing a song on stage, and his father left with a young girl. And as Dusty was watching his father leave right before his big solo, he got so wrapped up in the fact that his father was leaving with a younger woman that he couldn't perform his solo. And everyone, all the kids laughed at him. And of course, that song is brought back into is brought back into play. It becomes an awesome piece in the end. And with makes Mel's arc complete, but they just completely misused Mel. Mel is As an actor, he's intense. You know, he was an odd choice, I'll admit, for this one, because he's usually the guy that he brings such an intensity to the role. It's just, it makes the hair on your back of your neck stand up. But I didn't necessarily laugh at the jokes when he was on screen than I wanted to. I was trying to. Mm-hmm. I wanted to like Mel Gibson in this, and I do like him. I just think he was not. He wasn't used to his full potential.
Yeah. There was. It was right when they're getting off the escalator, and at this time, Kurt still thinks that Brad is a limousine driver or chauffeur, and he's like, "Here, go ahead. Take these bags. Bring the car around." And Brad, Will Ferrell's character, just says, "Right away, sir." You know, and he's like, "Oh no, I'm Brad. I'm sorry." Oh man, I that was one of the big laughs I thought I got from the meeting. And then you got John Lithgow coming down the escalator and them two kissing.
More than once too. Like, it wasn't just once. It was more than once. It was kind of weird. More than once, but it's John Lithgow actually was well cast for at least the character, at least for Brad's father. Like, if someone, like a year ago, someone's like gave me a list of five people of who to cast for each, I definitely would have chosen Lithgow as number one. I would not have chosen Mel Gibson to play Kurt Mayron, given what we knew about Dusty, if that makes any sense.
Mm-hmm.
But John Lithgow is a dead ringer for that one.
Yes. Oh yeah.
There are a couple of misses with this character as well. You kind of get the hints that, and it's not in a good way either. It's not subtle, which I want it to be, because I want this to be a good sequel to a comedy. But it's better than the first one, hands down. Mm-hmm. This does pass the Netflix test only because it's got so many great people under one movie. I mean, it's a great way to spend an hour and a half, hour and 45 minutes. But as far as you seeking it out to own it on Blu-ray or DVD, I just... probably not, if that makes any sense. But I want to say one of the huge missed opportunities, and completely out of character, as even though Kurt's existence in this movie is to drive a wedge between Brad and Dusty, trying to destroy that relationship, because he has a really terrible relationship with his son, so he's trying to make it so they have a terrible relationship too. And he does love his grandkids. That's not the issue. He does love his grandkids. He helps the boy. He helps the girl. You know, and two different things. He really does love his grandkids. Like, that's not the issue. It's not like a weird, like, oh, he hates his family kind of issue. It's the fact that, like, he has issues with his son. And they're self-inflicted issues. Like, he is the problem. He always was the problem. So, and there's this one miss when Lithgow is up on stage doing comedy improv, and Dusty realizes, Wahlberg's character Dusty realizes what's going on pretty quick, and he doesn't, what kills me is he doesn't pull Lithgow off stage, because he sees what's going on way before Brad does. And keep in mind, Brad and his father have a wonderful relationship, super close. I mean, they're kissing, for God's sakes, when they land at the airport. And for Dusty to see this and be as good a friend to Brad and as good co-dads, they're always fist bumping. And, hey, co-dad, you want to... Oh, thanks for bringing me my hot chocolate, co-dad. Oh, you want a piece of pie? Here you go, co-dad. Like, for being as good a friend as they were, and how the wedge hadn't really been driven that far yet by this point, by Kurt Mayron, it seems weird that all he did was say Brad's name a couple of times, and then Brad, like, kind of Will's character, Brad, kind of shut it down. Like, oh no, it's fine.
To me, it kind of felt a little forced.
Yeah, well, to me that was just Dusty would have, knowing the Dusty we got up to that point, I would have 100% guessed he would have gone up on stage and pulled him off stage to save him from further embarrassment. But he didn't, and that strikes me as out of character for Dusty. That was one of the things that it was completely out of character for Dusty. And I went to go see this movie with my accountant, Tim Turner, who said he's been giving me crap for weeks now because he hates Will Ferrell. But I'm going for Mel Gibson. I'm going for Mel Gibson. So he's like, fine. I have to go see how you react to this movie just based on your love for Mel Gibson. I said, fine. So we went, and he made a couple observations of the average Will Ferrell fan of, I fit the profile pretty well. He said, he says, I fit the profile more for a Will Ferrell fan than a Mel Gibson fan. I don't know what that means, but...
Oh, wow.
I mean, I love Mel. I mean, I've always loved Mel. But, I mean, I don't hate Will Ferrell. I just don't think he's funny anymore. I mean, I thought Anchorman was funny. I thought those movies... the last movie I thought he was hilarious in was probably the basketball movie. I was going to say Tropic Thunder, but that's not it. The one where he's Jackie Moon, the basketball player.
Yeah. Playing for the Flint Tropics.
Yeah, I just can't remember the... Oh, Semi-Pro.
Yeah, Semi-Pro.
That was the last movie I really found him funny in. And then I loved, of course, Stranger Than Fiction, and I loved Everything Must Go. But as far as Will Ferrell being funny, I just don't think he's funny anymore. It's my personal opinion. I know it varies, because people still do love him and love everything he's in, just go because he's in it. If this movie didn't have Mel Gibson and John Lithgow, it would have been much more difficult to sit through, only because all that comedy would have had to go through Will Ferrell, and I just don't think he's funny anymore.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. Not so much on the Will Ferrell part, but I mean, I still kind of find him funny. There, you know, a lot of his movies are hit and miss, and you know, I'm not a young child anymore with brainless ambition, but
I mean, you know, the peak for Will Ferrell as far as like me treating him like a god, or like thinking in my head, oh, Will Ferrell, he's just comedy god, like he's just the best, was probably, it was Old School and then Anchorman. And after that, it was never on that level again.
Mm-hmm.
It was always kind of funny, but it was never like Old School funny. And Old School wasn't funny because of him, it was funny because of other people. And Anchorman kind of was him. Like, that was Will Ferrell's movies, Anchorman. It just...
Yeah, exactly.
And, the movies after that were just not as funny. Anchorman 2 was a huge disappointment. A lot of people expected more from it. It just... I just expected more from him as an actor. But, I mean, people love him, so I'm sure he's fine. He's not hurting for money, I'm sure. John Cena's character, I thought, was well introduced here. He was well used. As you can guess, it ends up... They're all best buds. Like, they're all... There's going to be another one, I guarantee you. The production budget is going to be enormous because you have so many people. You have Will Ferrell, Mark Wahlberg, Mel Gibson, John Lithgow. You have Linda Cardellini coming back. Alessandro Ambrosio coming back. Oh, you have the two kids coming back. Then you have John Cena. And then you have whoever else they're going to introduce. And that's the one thing I want to talk about of this comedy is... Or this sequel is... It kept all the good stuff and added more. It didn't take anything away.
Mm-hmm.
Except Griff and the dog. I'm really upset about Griff and the dog. I'm really upset about that, man. I'm really upset about that. But it's okay, because there's still Will Ferrell's son, his new son named Griffy, which they forget many times. People keep saying, isn't that your son back there? And they have to keep running back and getting him. It's like, they're the most awful parents in the world. Jeez.
Yeah. Oh, God. Isn't that your son? That you just lay there while you fought?
I love... What else I wanted to make a note of, which I thought was... I was the only one laughing. I don't know how I was the only one laughing at this moment, but there's a moment when Brad's and Sarah's son is walking over to kiss a girl under the mistletoe. You know, it's in slow-mo. There's a funny song playing. It's a funny slow song playing. You know, it's big things are happening. And then Sarah goes, I don't have my camera. Where's my phone? It's not charged. And then she looks at Brad. She's like, give me your phone. She keeps like, give me your phone. She keeps slapping him so hard. I was rolling so hard. I probably could have wet myself. I was laughing so hard at that moment. But no one else was. As a matter of fact, not only was no one else laughing, people were looking at me like I was weird. It's like, you guys not see what's going on? She's slapping him so hard.
Just trying to enjoy this movie over here. All these people are judging me.
But as far as being a sequel to another comedy, I was okay with it. I'm usually not okay with comedy sequels because they just don't work like the original. But this one was better than the original. So, I mean, that's just my personal opinion. Did you think that as well?
Yeah, no, yeah. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it much. The first one was very funny. I mean, and obviously you get the same gags. Not you know, not hit the nail on the head same, but, you know, it's a movie, you know, it follows a formula, especially for the second one, and it's very enjoyable, very funny. You know, Daddy's Home 2 had a lot of funny jokes. The cast dives into a lot of social family structure issues.
Yeah, I thought it ended well, too. That's a danger zone for a lot of comedy sequels. How do you end it? How do you beat the original and end it? But it ended well. A big climactic scene in a movie theater. Oh, I think the Liam Neeson movie, that's hilarious.
Mistletoe.
Yeah, there's a, and you hear Liam talking to his, it's just the most cliche lines in the world, but, oh, man, Liam Neeson is, I was thinking to myself, boy, Liam Neeson's the one thing this movie's missing, and all of a sudden, there he is, like, he just, that's really cool. But
that is the one movie that everyone has to go see.
Mistletoe, is he's driving his kids home, and then he has to, on the way home for the holidays, he has to intercept an ICBM missile being towed by the bad guys as if it's just being towed. He has to stop it, and then, like, just, oh, it's hilarious. But definitely, I would say check this out for the reason of the huge cast, especially there are hints of old Mel Gibson in it. Like, there are moments where he wants to get intense, but he doesn't. But there, for those flashes of brilliance, you should definitely watch that. He's a brilliant actor, but, I mean, absolutely... It's a huge cast, and it's relatively funny. So there's no reason why you shouldn't watch it, I guess. So,
very true.
Murder on the Orient Express. Here we go. Nick, what'd you think?
Oh, well, for one, my mustache game is off. And I've been growing a beard for God knows how long. I need to stop. I need to just shave the beard, keep a mustache, and live my life like that.
Yeah, 100%.
My God, am I jealous? Am I jealous of Pierrot? You know, this is just—it's almost insane. But I guess that was the fashion statement back then. Everyone had mustaches.
Well, I mean, I think that was part of the allure of the character of Poirot. He's just like this. He's amazing. He's this amazing detective that figures anything out. And he played actually in the past by Albert Finney, the original. Murder on the Orient Express, 1974, by Sidney Lumet. It's been so long since I've seen it. And you know what? This is my fault. I didn't think to rewatch it until about 45 seconds before we started the podcast. So that's my mistake. Alfred Finney, Ingrid Bergman, Lauren Bacall, Sean Connery, tons of people in this movie. But again, Albert Finney plays, from what I remember, he's an okay Poirot. I actually prefer the Branagh. From what I remember, I prefer the Branagh portrayal, even though it's less than what it was meant to be.
Mm-hmm.
It was never meant to be this serious murder mystery. It's supposed to be a lighthearted, kind of almost funny. But this most recent update, 2017, takes it in a darker direction, which isn't a bad thing. The original was not taken in that same direction, but. It
was definitely comical at times. There's no shortness of that.
No, not at all. And I mean, a lot of the comics, a lot of it revolves around the mustache, which I'm okay with. Only because I mean, it's the mustache is almost a character by itself. Like it's every time Poirot Kenneth is on screen, I'm like, oh my God, that mustache is amazing, and I'm just staring at it in awe. Like, why can't I grow that? Why can't I grow that?
I don't know, man. This movie, I enjoyed it so much because I had I had high hopes for it, and you know it satisfied me. You know, the movie was twisting and turning like a West Virginia back road racing. You know, it threw me through a loop like a circus animal.
Ooh, okay.
You know, it's just I haven't seen the original. I will fess up to that. But I'm sure it's a little bit of the same of what I expected of the stars of their time, you know. And there's a lot of enjoyable character traits in here that we start to notice throughout the whole movie. And, you know, they become apparent by these little meetings that we have with each character in and out of this train ride. I was not impressed, but I was I enjoyed this movie a lot.
I did too. I actually thoroughly enjoyed it. Well, so we start at 1934. We start at the Wailing Wall, Jerusalem, where a crime has been committed, and Poirot figures it out, or Hercule Poirot. I do not slay the lions, as he says. Not it's not Hercules Poirot. It's Hercule. He's not
Hercule.
Yeah, Hercule. He figures out a crime pretty quick, and with the precision of a sniper of the best caliber, he just boom, like he just nails it on the head, with given so little information. It's almost like watching an episode of House. He arrives at this conclusion, like, oh my, how did anyone possibly see that? But he is a good detective. The things he notices as it goes on are not things that are not out of the blue. It's like one time he notices the stripes on someone's gun handle, which as a cop you would, and then knows mm-hmm. this person was not telling the truth about something in their past because of that. So that makes, I'm happy that they chose real things that he chose to debunk about people and not just these insane asinine conclusions that you would arrive at that, you know, to make him, oh, he's a good detective in the movie, and here's why. Just, you know what I mean? It's like, it wasn't like they were, like, forcing it down your throat. They were like, okay, well, we can accept this. That's fine.
Yeah.
We start in Jerusalem, and then he has to get on a train, and there has to be a spot for him. So he's got onto the train. Someone does not show up. He's given their spot. He wants to be on vacation. He wants to be as far away from crime solving as possible. Just enjoy his next few days. Of course, it does not happen. Halfway up the mountain.
And you know what? Sorry, Chris. Sorry to interrupt you, but this whole movie is based on this guy just needing a few days away from all the crime, and it is just he just gets thrown into it. It's hilarious.
So we're on a train with Angelica the Pirate, Catwoman, Catfile, LeFou, M, Jack Sparrow, Mustache, Jedi, the Doctor, and that guy from Magnificent Seven. That's who we're on the train with. and the Green Goblin. And the Green Goblin, for sure.
Yes. Oh, God. What an odd bunch of characters.
Well, it makes sense.
The longer
you're in the movie, the more the scenario makes sense mm-hmm. as to why those particular people are on the, you know what I mean? Because any murder movie always like, oh, how did those people get involved? Like, how did all those people get involved? I mean, there are, it makes more sense as it goes on, which is what I was happy with.
Mm-hmm.
I love the visuals.
Yes.
I love the choices of, there's some interesting shots from the camera, for instance, in the train hallway. You know how like the brooms are on like 3/4 of the side of the car, and then 1/4 of the car is like the walkway, and then when people are talking right in front of someone's room, the camera is directly above head, and we're not talking like for like a few seconds, we're talking for like minutes, for like 5 or 10 minutes, the camera is above, and you see the whole scene play out with people. I mean, so this wasn't like shot. It wasn't shot edited. It was like a lot of these scenes were all one take.
Yeah.
So people had to hit their mark. They had to remember the line. So that's pretty cool. That's quite impressive. The longer a shot goes without editing, the more impressive it is.
Yeah. When you watch a one shot take, it's fantastic. I know True Detective has one of the best ones I've ever seen. But to do that, you know, you think it would almost make sense to do that? I mean, I don't know if they shot an actual train, but
I'm sure the train. I don't know. It was definitely a set with stuff on the window to make it to a green. It was definitely a set built. But I mean, they were not filming up in the mountains for sure.
Mm-hmm. But those one shots, you know, definitely make things a lot easier, I think.
I really enjoyed those shots. Also, good show, man. Good that True Detective. That's a pretty good show.
Oh, yeah, fantastic.
Yeah, first season's excellent. Second season, not as excellent, but still good. But anyway, getting back to Murder on the Orient Express. It's very entertaining to actually go on this trip with him, and because he's never met these people and he's interviewing them after the murder happens, you're learning the same time. You're learning the same information that he is for the first time. So it's almost fun to poke holes in people's stories as he's poking holes and seeing how you come up with it as opposed to how he came up with it. Yeah, I mean that's pretty cool. I thought that was.
Yeah, exactly. You get to draw your conclusions from what's happening, from what you're being shown.
I thought that was pretty cool. I love the cast too. I will say, it's a well chosen cast. I didn't have a problem with anyone. And usually there's always one person like, God, why is that person cast? But I was okay with everyone. I like seeing Daisy Ridley as not a Jedi.
Mm-hmm.
I like seeing her in other things. I like seeing, of course, I like seeing Michelle Pfeiffer. I like seeing Derek Jacobi. You know, all the people were very enjoyable to watch, and you know that they all have quite the following and quite the impressive resume as well. Except for the car dealer, Marquez, and the doctor. I haven't really seen much of them, but I know the, but they did quite well actually. I didn't have a problem. Yeah.
Sorry.
No, I was going to say, I didn't have a problem with anyone's performance, I was going to say.
Yeah, exactly, and I totally agree with you. I thought the doctor played well, and, yeah, I was about to say, I haven't seen him in much, but he did a damn well good job.
I'm surprised how it... I'm definitely not going to... So don't like, turn us off right now. I'm not going to spoil it, but I'm definitely surprised at how it played out.
I wrote a note about that.
I've really enjoyed that was kind of a... I didn't expect it to go in the route that it went, but I'm kind of glad it did. It took balls to go that way, but...
Mm-hmm.
So I'm really glad.
It really did. And especially this time of age. But, like I said, man, this movie, man, twists and turns, and learning these new character traits, man... Every time Hercule goes to interview someone, he picks a certain place and, you know, basically to catch them off guard. But
that's always fun, yeah.
It's interesting.
I think so.
One of the shots that I thought was probably the most beautiful of all, probably green screen, but it's when Hercule gets on top of the train. And there's just the mountain behind him.
Oh, like, yeah, with those, like, the morning sun coming up? Yeah.
Yeah.
Beautiful. Like, an orange, blue, pink, yellow sun rising up the mountain. Yeah, it's wonderful. Like, it's absolutely wonderful. I did enjoy that. I mean, I'm, of course, leaving out of my... I'm, of course, choosing to ignore, you know, this impossibly ridiculous... For instance, the crew that came to dig them out. There's an avalanche that happened. That's why they're at standstill. There's a part in the film where there's an avalanche, and this train is on the side of this impossibly steep mountain, and instead of the snow coming down and knocking the train off, which is what it would have done, it just it just derails them a little bit.
Yeah.
That avalanche, I think, would have just knocked that train clean off the mountain.
Yeah, that's certainly interesting how that happened, because I don't believe that for a goddamn second.
No, not even... Nope, I wouldn't... Nope.
I feel like if a train, if the front of it gets just a little derailed, I feel like the ass end's gonna follow after, you know, the middle part.
Of course, I mean, that's how, you know... But no, I don't think what would happen... I was okay with it. I really enjoyed watching. I like Kenneth Branagh now more than I ever did, but I like him as Poirot.
I'm thinking they're gonna take his character and make at least two, maybe three more movies.
I don't know. It depends on how this does box office wise, because in the end of this one, he walks right into the sequel. If there is going to be a sequel, it walks right into it.
Yes.
So, I mean, I would like to see more of, I would like to see more of Poirot for the same reason we all watched House for even a few seasons. You'd love to see how he arrives at the conclusion he arrives at.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, even in House, he's so damn clever, just like Poirot. He's just so clever, almost to the point of impossibility, but it's just before that. So he's not impossibly clever, he's just really clever. If that makes any sense, but Now, Nick, before we hop into Clark Hayes, I want to talk about for 1 second comedies and sequels. Given how so many of them fall flat, and Daddy's Home 2 is actually much better than the original, what are some of the, give me some comedies you like and then the sequels that either really, really sucked or you really liked.
Okay, well, I'll do an easy one right here. Ghostbusters. Obviously, first one was great. The second one, however, I didn't feel for it as much.
Fair enough.
I think that's, a lot of people didn't either.
I know there are people that agree with you and there are people that do not agree with you, but I mean, you're going to have that with anything. So, I mean,
yeah.
But we can all agree that the most recent installment, not good. it wasn't the same awesome that the original Ghostbusters were.
Yeah.
And so, I mean.
Yeah, pretty true.
So.
Art.
Yeah. So, anyway.
Do you think they're going to make a sequel? I think, I don't know if I've heard anything, but.
To what?
To a sequel to that Ghostbusters.
I can't imagine. I think the public outcry was more hate than it was like for it.
Yeah.
So I kind of enjoyed it. I like Hemsworth. I like all the female actors. I enjoyed it for what it was. Mm-hmm. I enjoyed the cast. If you look at it as its separate movie, not as a Ghostbusters movie, but as a movie with Ghostbusters in it, it's much better. But if you look at it as it's a Ghostbuster movie, but it's not as good as the original. You know, it kind of takes a toll on you there. But I didn't mind. I like those. I like the talent. I actually really enjoyed it. I mean, I didn't hate it. So, but me saying I enjoyed it and didn't hate it are two different things. Because I didn't, as a Ghostbusters movie, I didn't much care for it. But as a standalone, I definitely I pleasantly enjoyed it. I like the Hangover movies. I think those.
Yes. Yes.
I think the original Hangover is so good. I know that I know that I see over and over again David Dobkin, who did Wedding Crashers, he talks about doing a sequel, and I think it's just too late. That was in 2005, it's now almost 2018. For as funny as that movie was, and as good as it, and well received in the box office, like, it's incredible amount of money for a comedy, but.
I'm sorry, well, could you repeat that?
Oh, I was just going to say Wedding Crashers.
Oh, Wedding Crashers. Oh, man.
That movie's so funny. But
oh, yeah.
He's been talking about a sequel since 2006, and we just haven't seen it. So that's one I wish we'd get, and we're just not getting. So I just don't think we're going to get. I thought Bad Moms 2 and Daddy's Home 2, which ironically, they came out this 1 week after another, and both are about the parents' mothers and then the parents' fathers coming. I thought that was kind of cool, but... That's that's not a coincidence. Can't be a coincidence. They wanted to release them next to each other for a reason. But
Wayne's World's classic.
Was there a sequel? Was there a sequel to that? There was, right?
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, Wayne's World. Clerks and Clerks 2.
Oh yeah.
I thought were pretty funny. There are a lot of what other comedies? The Hangover one I already said, but that was I think that's a pretty good example these days of. You know, sequels are done right. Anchorman didn't work.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know, man. I enjoyed Anchorman too. There were some things that, you know, obviously didn't work, but
it just didn't have the magic of the original. It just didn't.
Yeah, exactly. The original was exactly what it is. Exactly, it's an original.
I was
Austin Powers.
Okay. I like. You know what I love the first one. I love the third one. Not crazy about the second one, but I love the first and the third. I think they're funny, super funny. I would have always wanted a sequel to Old School and what was the other one? A Road Trip. Road Trip and Old School.
Yeah.
I wanted to see, and those are both Todd Phillips. So I wanted to see more of those. We didn't get to. I thought it was weird because they made great money and were very well received.
Road Trip with
Sean William Scott, Ethan Embry. Yeah,
they made a second one.
Did they really?
It wasn't with any of the characters. It was exactly. It was a flop. You know. It wasn't.
Oh,
one of them.
Well, I must have seen it and like or I must have like seen it advertised somewhere. I'm like, oh, that I don't want to watch that.
I believe it was Road Trip to Beer Pong or something like that, and they go on the
maybe. Okay, yeah, that's. But I mean,
yeah,
I'm talking about with the same cast.
Yeah, you know,
I mean, exactly. Because, I mean, they've made, how many American Pie movies have they made? I mean, there's the three in the trilogy, and then there's, like, the seven offspin, like, American Pie Band Camp, and then, there, you know, there's, like, The Naked Mile, and then there's so many of them. But I don't like the original three. Only three I like the original three.
21, 22 Jump Street.
Those are pretty funny. I'll give you that. Those are pretty funny. when they're tossing the gun, when they're, like, playing catch with the gun, and he's like, and Jonah Hill's like, wait, this gun's loaded? It's not loaded, right? And then he's like, no, that's no fun. It's got to be loaded. I'm like, what? Oh, my God. Those are pretty funny, I thought. I don't really... Comedies are harder than sequels, too.
Yeah.
Because you really have to re-catch the magic of the original, and most times they just don't.
I guess Rush Hour 2 was decent.
Okay, I'll give Rush Hour 2. Rush Hour 3, not so much, but...
One, I will say, I don't know if people will hate me for this, I love Scary Movie.
Well, Scary Movie is actually pretty good. The first one, and I'll go even as far as to say the second one, are actually pretty good.
I did not like the second one.
I love the third one. I thought the third one was very, very clever. Super clever. I didn't like any ones after that, though, to be honest. But taking an idea and stretching it past its original limit is just, it's just never good. It's never good.
And, I don't know. Grown Ups, too, I guess. I enjoy Grown Ups.
Oh, so bad. I just...
It's,
I laughed, but it's just, it's so bad. I mean, it's...
This is one of those... one of those life-changing moments where you realize that people who actually are talking all this mad crap on Adam Sandler, you're like, can it not be true? But it is.
Well,
a little bit.
Old School's kind of interesting, because I did some research on that, and that was actually supposed to be made back in the Chris Farley days, but they shelved it when he passed away. That was actually like one of the ones that were like, they were primping to be one of the next movies. So imagine how different that would have been, shot in the late 90s, instead of Kevin, what's his name, from King of Queens?
Kevin James.
Instead of Kevin James, it was Chris Farley. Imagine how different that would have been.
And that was for Grown Ups, right?
Yeah, Grown Ups and Grown Ups 2, yeah.
Chris Farley was supposed to be one. I've heard that too, and... I was a huge fan of
Chris Farley. Yeah, Chris Farley. Who wasn't, man?
R.I.P. Chris Farley.
That's a shame. Well, that's Chris Farley and David Spade. Oh.
They were fantastic, and they had. It was a couple other things that, they were just gonna do, and they had planned, but obviously it came to an end with Chris Farley's life, but also Shrek. He was supposed to be the voice for Shrek.
Was he?
Yeah, and he had a pretty good bit of it already done, but he obviously died before the final results, so they brought Mike Myers in. And still fantastic movie. But
the first two Shreks are pretty good. Three, not so good. Shrek 4, terrible. But I'd say terrible with a grain of salt, because there were things I liked about Shrek, about the fourth Shrek, but the third one I liked the third one, a lot of people did. I just thought I really enjoyed where that went, but it certainly wasn't the first two, but
yeah.
Jumping into Clark Haves, this movie we should probably watch this week. As much as I wanted to go with a comedy, I went with Zodiac to go with Murder on the Orient Express, if you enjoyed that. Zodiac, 2007, David Fincher is the director. Jake Gyllenhaal, Robert Downey Jr., Mark Ruffalo, Brian Cox, John Carroll Lynch. It's 1970s. A killer dove, the Zodiac, terrorizes the city of San Francisco. Robert Gray Smith and Paul Avery, cartoonist and reporter respectively, become obsessed with finding the Zodiac killer. Robert's life and family become secondary to finding the killer. It's obsession. And as always, we do... first of all, Nick, what do you think about... about Zodiac? I know you saw it.
Oh, yeah. Well, obviously, I'm a huge fan of Jake Gyllenhaal. Always have been, always will be. It was an interesting movie, man, because this, obviously, if you live out in California, this movie's going to hit you in your own home, it kept you on the edge of your seat. It was a thriller by standards, and man, you just had no freaking idea what was gonna happen, really.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. Well, David Fincher, he really excels in movies like that. I know he did, although really disappointed at Alien 3, but it wasn't his fault. It wasn't David Fincher's fault that movie didn't work as well as it should have, but mm-hmm. Alien 3, 7, The Game, Fight Club, Panic Room, Zodiac, The Curious Case of Benjamin Button, which is the odd one out of this list, Social Network, Girl with a Dragon Tattoo, Gone Girl, Mindhunters, and now he's doing World War Z 2, he's on IMDb as doing World War Z 2. But if you notice, all those are thrillers or, you know, political thrillers or just straight up thrillers, like, except for Benjamin Button. That's such an odd choice for him. But but it still falls within his genre of style. Second reason, he loves the use of color. It adds the grit and the grime of usually the same tempo and style of his movies. He uses the same color scheme, and that's what I love about a David Fincher movie. You know what you're getting when you go into it. He doesn't use a lot of handheld. He does use a lot of fixed camera, but like I said, you know what you're going into by the camera setups and by the tone he sets and the color. You know exactly what you're getting when you go into a movie. Just like most people these days, When you go into a Christopher Nolan movie, you know exactly what you're getting. You know exactly the camera's gonna be the camera style. You know exactly the huge, like, Hans Zimmer sweeping scores that go into it. There's one scene in particular, the basement, and I haven't seen Zodiac for a while, so I had to just refresh my memory on this one. But
I can close my eyes and see that basement.
Oh, man, it's creepy. Oh my goodness. And that's what David Fincher excels at. But Jake Gyllenhaal he goes to someone's house to ask about a handwriting sample. And what works in David Fincher movies is, and Seven's a prime example, and Fight Club. Most people have seen Seven or Fight Club. A prime example of the hierarchy of knowledge of when a character learns information, they know they're in trouble. Like, they know that they're in a bad situation, and it's only going to get worse. And so the guy says something whose place Jake Gyllenhaal's at to do a handwriting sample, and it snaps to Jake Gyllenhaal, like, oh, no. Uh-oh. and then the guy's like, actually, I have more in the basement. Let's go get those. And, of course, he has to go down there. And he's following this guy, making sure he's never letting him out of his sight. And the guy hands him this thing out of a box, and then he looks at it, and Jake Gyllenhaal starts to, like, slowly go up, like, slowly get out of there, and the guy just turns the light off. Like, well, he, like, and then creepy, and then Jake Gyllenhaal's running up the steps, trying to get out the back door, and he can't, and then the dude's just right behind him. Talk about creepy.
Yeah, oh, man.
But it's built in a way that Fincher does so well, if that makes sense.
It's the unspoken truth, you know, where obviously you're finding out something that isn't blatantly told. Fantastic.
No, I totally agree. So that's a very good addition to the Clark Hayes. That's maybe once a year around the October timeline, just pop it in and watch it. You know, get yourself a pizza, pop it in and watch it. You'll be happy every time you did. As always, we can be found on Apple. You can set to download each episode. You can get each episode automatically downloaded. You can listen to whenever you want. Google Play for Android users. iTunes, obviously, or Podbean. You can get us directly from there. Check out the Facebook page at For the Love of Cinema and the Twitter at Love Cinema Pod. I can reach Grayson Maxwell 1 and Nick.
And Morris 1776. You already know, folks.
Yes, ladies. And Morris 1776. He loves America. You should love him.
It's true.
It's true. All right. Thank you very much for listening, and have a good evening.